Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the show where we discuss football like responsible adults and fail spectacularly every time. The Premier League is back.
That's right. Brighton grabbed a point against Fulham after taking the lead, which, let's be honest, feels like a tale as old as time.
And Palace, we got a point at the world champions Chelsea, and VAR still found a brand new way to ruin our day.
We're also taking a look at the rest of the games from game week one.
Plus, we'll review all the comings and goings at both clubs, who's arrived, who's left, and who we're still wondering why we signed.
And of course, we'll preview the upcoming fixtures for Palace and Brighton.
This is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Andy.
All right, Neil, how are you?
I'm good, mate, thank you. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm all right, actually. Yeah, I'm better than I thought I would be on a Sunday evening. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice doing it on a Sunday evening. We've got all the results from the Premier League. Everything's just finished.
Yeah.
Hot off the press.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's been a great week just getting started, getting the whole thing just up and running. It just feels like we're in it now, you know?
It does. And, I mean, two chaps sat in a room who are remarkably positive with 2 points between us, actually. To be honest, I don't know if we've quite interpreted all of this correctly.
Tried to stay positive. Yeah, as I said in the intro, it was a tale as old as time for me on the weekend.
It's something that I'm not surprised about. We'll talk about that in a minute. Well, in fact, should we talk about that now? Should we crack on?
Let's just do it. Brighton and Hove Albion won. Fulham won.
Were you not winning this game, Neil? What's that?
Oh, dear. If I'd been watching it on TV, I would have turned the TV off and not known, I tell you. I would have not known that we'd drawn the game. It was... let's start from the beginning. Everyone knows what happened, but let's just talk about the game generally. First of all, it's just great to be back. It was great to go to the Amex. It was great to get there, stand outside, see everyone, talk to everyone, get your food. Well, I say get my food. I went up to the stall and they'd run out of food. Like first day of the season and they don't have any burgers or hot dogs or
anything. Probably because your season tickets are still on sale.
Still you haven't sold to raise them all.
They thought they wouldn't fully cater.
It was a good day in that sense. Great to get everything started. The first thing I would say is the lineups. It was very much the same as the Wolfsburg game. So it was a little bit of a surprise in the sense that I was expecting Welbeck to come in, but he didn't. So Jorginho Rutter stayed up front with O'Reilly just in behind him. The only change that actually happened was Gomez was put back onto the bench and replaced by Carlos Baleba.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely to have him back. Thank you, Manu.
For now.
The game got underway and do you know what? It felt like the first day of the season. It felt a little bit like a pre-season. I think a lot of the games this weekend felt like that.
Yeah.
Not quite on it. You know, everyone's not quite on it. And Jorginho Rutter was one of those players that I think wasn't quite on it to start with. But then saying that, he was playing in that number nine position, which I'll talk a bit more about later, which is what I don't like about it anyway in particular. It was a fairly good start from Albion. Yankuba Minta mainly was the one that was sort of trying his best to make a difference in those first sort of 10, 15 minutes, really putting Calvin Bassey to the sword. Well, I say that actually. I mean, I think over the whole game, Calvin Bassey played really well at left back, which was a really interesting position to put him in. But I think he was there specifically for that purpose of trying to stop Yankuba Minta. He was definitely the brightest player, though, Minta. And what I would say is I think Minta has a lot of developing to do still. You saw that a lot in the first half. He still needs to learn that his speed and his power as such isn't always going to get past a fullback. You know, like, Bassey is so big and strong and he's quick that suddenly Minte just trying to power past him, it didn't work, you know? It didn't really come off that many times.
And he had a couple of moments though, didn't he? When I was watching it. Yeah, he did have a couple of moments of brilliance, but you're right. It's a little bit Eze-esque where you're like, just pass the ball, man.
And I think that's the thing. It's like, it's just trying to make sure that he understands there are different ways to beat different players, you know? And at the moment, and it's literally early days, isn't it? First day of the season, obviously. Mm. But I just think sometimes he needs to change up his approach, you know, stand the defender up and look to change direction or pass it off quicker. It was just those little things, a little bit frustrating to watch. He was trying, the effort was there 100%.
Yeah.
But Calvin Bassey was fantastic on Saturday. I have to give it to him.
So just to clarify then, you're saying like effort was there, just ability issues? Is that what we're going for?
No, not ability issues, development issues.
Okay.
Understanding the game and who he's playing against at that moment.
Get it.
And realising there's other options, I would say. The game in the first half, the first 45 minutes, I'm not going to talk too much about it in some respects, because there were a few fleeting chances from both sides. Minte did have the ball in the back of the net at one point, but the goal was disallowed for the fact that the ball went over the touchline right at the end with the cross from Belaba. So, you know, totally understandable.
And I thought he looked good.
Who's that?
Minte.
Yeah, like I said,
in the first half.
He always tries, and he's very good. But look, at the end of the first half, I think we had maybe the majority of the play just, but it was a very even game and a little bit rusty on both sides, I would argue. So 0-0. And I'm sort of sitting there thinking to myself, there is one change I would make. And I sort of said it the last couple of weeks when I've been watching the preseason friendlies. And that is that I just think Jorginho Rutta isn't a number nine. He's not a striker. I don't think he has the instinct or the ability in some respects, because he doesn't have the experience of being that last man. He wants to drop deep, he wants to pick up the play, and he wants to connect other players with what he's doing. Mm. And having him at that number nine position, I mean, O'Reilly was okay. You know, he was pretty good through the game. But I just think Jorginho Rutter is wasted in that number nine position.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what they're going to do as the season goes on. I was shocked to see Welbeck on the bench. I don't know whether he's had a little knock or something, but we'll have to wait and see. I was thinking half time, bring on Welbeck. You know, we'll make a little change, take O'Reilly off, put Rutter in that hole, and we'll see what happens. You know, last season it was good enough. You know,
well, I imagine that give it a couple of months and you're... Greek new signing will come of age.
Well, I'm hoping so,
and
Andy.
Be allowed to, you know, be out of the house for more than 2 hours at a time and get a full 90 minutes.
He won't have a curfew.
Yeah, and look, jokes aside, he does look good, doesn't he? And I think that in my mind, he would probably get that position. That, I mean, that's why he's been signed, isn't it?
That's the whole point, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
You know, but at the moment, I just find it strange that we're taking Rutter out of what is a very good position for him, where he creates so much. And look, my point is proved by the fact that we came out the second half, we were a little bit brighter, and 10 minutes within the second half, a move sort of from, I think it was from Dunk started it, into De Kuyper, who's starting to look really good.
He was.
Passes it into Jorginho Rutter, who's come really deep, right into midfield. And lo and behold, he runs, takes on a couple of players, gets into the box, and I think it was Sanderberg brought him down for a penalty. And that makes the difference. He's done what he normally does, which is he comes deep, takes on players, causes a problem for people, and suddenly he's got a penalty.
And I liked that. I watched that and I thought, do you know what? That's a great move and a great run from him. I think, do you know what my beef on all this is?
Mm.
You think about Welbeck, right? I think about this from a Palace point of view sometimes when, like, we play Lerma in defence, and he's actually a midfielder, a defensive midfielder, and he takes preference over some of them defenders sat on the bench to go on as centre-back. And Welbeck could be thinking the same thing, which is, hang on a minute, I've got a guy up there who's starting over me in out of position.
It's so strange.
It's really weird, and I'm hoping it's not just a manager fancies him over Welbeck.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, Welbeck's had his best season ever last season. Scored the most goals ever in a season, and now he's starting on the bench. Look, we'll have to wait and see. Going back to the game, penalty. Yeah. I think the next question was who was going to take the penalty, because João Pedro obviously left in the summer, and everyone was wondering. They actually asked Hörsler in the week in his press conference who was going to take it, and he said, "Well, we'll see. We haven't decided yet." You know, so Ayari actually picked up the ball, but then and I was wondering whether he's doing the old fashioned dummy run, you know, the one that stands at the penalty spot. And true to fashion, he did move aside and give the ball to Matt O'Reilly, who stepped up. And I think once the ref had sort of signalled that it was a penalty, gave the ball to O'Reilly. O'Reilly steps up, 1-0, really good pen.
It was a good pen.
It was really
good. The type of pen that I like, Neil. No dancing prior to it. None of the other should, but just hit the ball, get it in one of the corners, and you're done.
Yeah.
Fair play to the kid. Yeah.
And you know, 1-0. We're looking okay, not brilliant, been pretty even both sides, but I thought, I'll take this, you know, 1-0 up. If we can just hold on now and maybe get a goal on the break, And actually, that's sort of what was happening through the rest of the game, really. Fulham made quite a few changes then, and they brought on players like, you know, Adama Traore, Muniz, or Muniz, I think it is, Smith Rowe, Kearney, basically ball players. You know, they changed the way they were playing to a little bit more. They've got to go for it.
They've got more depth than I ever give them credit for. Yeah. If you look at their bench, I mean, them names you just mentioned there, they're starting players, really.
I agree.
But I did think that you looked very dangerous on the break in the first part. Part of it, and there was part of me thinking they're going to settle into this, and there wasn't a single part after that first half that didn't. I genuinely believe you were going to come away with the 3 points.
I was surprised because of the way the game went. I agree with you, and I think what we were waiting for to happen. So when Fulham made those changes, obviously they're therefore going to attack. They're going to attack more, and as you said, that creates more holes. Hörsler then makes a few changes. Obviously, players are starting to get a little bit tired. So he brings on Ferdi Kadioglu for his first appearance, which is great news for us. Plays him on the right wing, first of all, though, actually from an attacking point of view, because he can play anywhere, really, on those wings. And brings on Welbeck, finally. And Diego Gomez comes on. Now, Diego Gomez finished the season with that, if you remember, that fantastic goal at Spurs the last day of the season. And we were like, oh, this is going to be great next season. Can't wait to see him. And he came on, and bless his heart, he had a little bit of a stinker, Andy.
Oh, dear.
You know, while Fulham are throwing men forward, it's helped us to create, you know, a few chances on that counter. And Gomez was at the heart of most of them, to be honest. Whether it was like a, you know, a vital pass or having a final shot, nearly everything we did sort of touched him in some way.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, nearly everything he did didn't quite work. And it was, you could see it, you know. I think the crowd weren't particularly groaning over heavily. I think we all knew
it's hard not to, though, isn't it? There's a natural groan.
It's a frustration, isn't it? You can't help it. But, you know, either his shots were too soft or his passes were too heavy. It was just a bit of a mare, really, all round. And it was just ironic that nearly every chance that we had on that counter-attack fell to him some way to make a key pass or a key shot. And I mean, we had two or three opportunities in that last 15 minutes that really meant we should have been two or three up by that moment. And Fulham, they get their equaliser. You know, I'm not going to go over it too much. I think there was a couple of points that I read from a couple of other people talking, and I think they make really good points around, Hörsler alluded to it in his press conference as well, that although obviously we're frustrated with the goal being let in from a corner, ironically, it was probably more the fact that we conceded the corner in the first place, which was the problem, and the way that we tried to defend from the front. There was a few players, and I think, unfortunately, I think Welbeck was probably one of them, that didn't do their job properly at one point, and we conceded a shot that got deflected and went off for a corner. And I think that was probably part of the issue that he was more frustrated with.
I kind of look at it a bit of a different way, which is, I think you lost that game not because you conceded the corner, or because you let the late goal in. I look at it and think that you were dangerous, and you had three or four really big clear-cut chances that you didn't take.
Oh, I agree.
So therefore, that's where the realistically, issue is. You should have won that 3-4-1 as opposed to drew it 1-1.
And this ultimately, Andy, is where some of my, I've got some final thoughts on this. Ooh. And it's almost a bit like Jerry Springer.
I like it.
I mean, first of all, let me just be clear, right? So stats-wise, just to sort of even up the understanding of how the game went, right? So overall, it probably was a fair result, the draw, in some respects, when you look at it over the whole 96 minutes. Possession, 50-50, practically. Shots, 10 to Albion, 7 to Fulham.
That's closer than I thought it was.
XG, although the XG looks much different because Brighton had a penalty. If you take the penalty out of it, because the XG for a penalty is literally 0.75, like it's really high. So if you take the penalty out of it, the XG between the two clubs is actually 0.75 for Albion and 0.69 for Fulham. So the amount of chances we actually had in the game between the two of us was fairly even. And I think, as I say, it was quite a disjointed game. Both teams didn't look quite on it. I think Fulham weren't as good as Albion. I think Albion still had the majority of the opportunities, and the passing, etc., worked better for them. But ultimately, we come away with a point. And it was a shame, because after the game, Gomez looked visibly upset. You know, he you could see that he needed consoling. There was a few players talking
to him. Well, he's a stinker, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's young still. You know, he's
stung the place out.
Oh, bless him. So that game goes the other way and we're 1-0 down for 96 minutes and we score in the 96th minute. I've got a completely different mood. But because it was that way round, it just feels like...
Well, mate, any goal that goes in past 90 minutes, especially, was it 96 minutes or something?
It was 96, literally 10 seconds before the final whistle.
It's an absolute travesty when you're the supporter watching it. I'm not going to lie to you, I celebrated that Fulham goal hard.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it from a Palace point of view, but also, I mean, I'm concerned for you.
I'll take that with the pinch of salt that I can see.
No, I am. I'm concerned for Brighton and... the fact that you've got a really talented squad. Yeah. And I'm going to give you compliments here, right?
But okay.
You've got a really talented squad. Your recruitment's brilliant.
Wait for it.
No, there's no dig. It's the reality. And I think you know what I'm about to say,
which is
last year, I believe it was something around 22 points that you lost from winning positions.
Yeah,
last
it was like
season.
11 games or something.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's happening again on the first day of the season.
Yeah.
With, well, I mean, you've got pretty much your first squad, haven't you?
You
haven't got anyone out injured.
No injuries. And to be fair, the guys that were on the pitch for most of it, there was no real new players as such, apart from one. So there was everybody on that pitch should understand what they were doing.
And it's and do you know what? It's something that you can't really explain or write. But my example being, Neil, that Palace went through this for years under Roy Hodgson. Say for example, I'm not trying to compare the two; they're miles apart, right? But you know that in that last 5 minutes of the game and in extra time, everyone at Selhurst Park. Biting their fingernails, waiting for that last minute goal to go in, because that's what we did. Mm. Now, it's a bit different to that. I think there's a level of confidence in the defence where you kind of go, nah, nothing's getting past it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you go from I don't want you to be like Palace, but what I'm trying to say is how do you go from that, like, we're the team that drops at the last minute to... It's a mindset thing, isn't it?
It's exactly a mindset thing. And it's also a continuity thing.
Yeah.
So your back four, five, as it were, although, you know, they've had a lot of time to work together and they've had success together. I think as soon as you have success together, like any sort of habit, you know, any sort of repetition, it becomes a habit. And at the moment, I don't think we're quite there. I think half the issue, though, isn't necessarily about the conceding of the goals. It's about, you're quite right, the experience, the mentality of the players themselves. There's a young squad and they've got to learn, and they've got to learn quick, let's be honest, because this season can't go the same way that it went last season. They've got to learn quick. But ultimately, you hit the nail on the head about 2 minutes ago when you said we should have been two or three up.
Yeah.
Conceding one goal in the last minute doesn't make a blind bit of difference if we're three up. And having someone up front in that striker position, which we haven't replaced João Pedro. Mm. We've bought some great players, hopefully, for the future, but we haven't replaced João Pedro for right now. Jorginho Rutter is not a number nine. He is a fantastic number 10, and he is a creator and someone that creates chances. He is not a number nine. And I know I put him down last week as a predictor for top goal scorer, but that's not as a number nine.
Get it? Yeah.
He's someone that will create goals for other people and score himself, I appreciate. But I'll try and keep some positives here.
We got a point, mate.
It's the first game of the season. It might feel like a loss, but we didn't lose. We got a point against a team that we've only won once since we've been in the Premier League against.
So, you're joking?
No, that was last game. Last time we beat them was the first time we've ever beaten them in the Premier League. It's literally our bogey team. So we got a point. We should have, got three, I know, but we got a point.
And do you know what I also think? Still with our teams as they are, Neil, the base minimum that you ever want to get out of an opening day fixture is a point.
Oh, I agree.
Do you know why?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be that team 3 or 4 weeks in, they're still not off the mark.
No.
We're off the mark, mate.
I totally agree, mate. Look, Maxim de Kuyper looks like he's always played for Albion. He's fitted in so well, really assured, and just a great passer of the ball. Just understands what's asked of him. There were a few occasions in the game where you looked at it, and you can't help but compare with Purvis, obviously, but as he's left, and you go, that's a sensible idea, what you've just done there, rather than that head's gone, I'm just bombing down. It's really sensible. And he's looking really good already. And the only downside I would say now is just looking ahead slightly. You know, you've got, in our next few games, before the end of September, we've got Man City, Spurs and Chelsea to play. Yeah. Exactly.
With your young, inexperienced team.
Yeah, exactly. So there needs some growing up to be done, and there needs some real hard work to be done around what we're going to do when we've done 80, 90 minutes of hard work and earned 3 points and yeah. then concede an extra goal. It's, you know, it hurts, but we are where we are. I'm trying to try and keep positive. It's one game in. And there were some really good play out there. There were some really good hard work out there from certain people. So we'll have to wait and see. Brighton won. Fulham won.
Well done, Fulham.
Job done.
Okay.
Can I stop talking about Albion for a minute now? Because it's going to get me too depressed.
Yeah, no,
can
mate.
Can I start ripping?
But do you know what? Jokes aside, I watched that first half and I was actually quite impressed.
Yeah.
And Maxim de Kuyper, I like that kid. And I think that there was rumours of us being in for him at one point, I believe, in the early days. And I wouldn't have been upset about that,
no,
judging on what I've just seen. So, yeah, you know, mate, you've got a good score. And do you know what I never thought about, really, until you said it? Again, a bit of a nail on the head moment for me, which is you're known for your young recruitment. You're picking the finest talent from these random places and making them into good players. But obviously, in the early stages of that, you've got a team who are almost naive in certain situations, and you know, need to learn the game management and understand it all and all the other bits and pieces. And I think that's potentially maybe you got a young team.
And I think that's half the issue with what happened this weekend. I won't go over it again, but by the time we got to the 96th minute, the five subs that came on hadn't played a huge amount of Brighton games, apart from Welbeck. The rest hadn't actually played that many. And it just felt a bit disjointed at the end. And so there's obviously something we need to do there. We need to work on it, and they will work on it. Next up is Everton. We can talk about that at the end
of the
week.
Oh, mate, you'll
smash
them.
Well, we can talk about that in part three.
Yep.
So, Andy.
Yes.
Hot off the press, the game finished a few hours ago.
It did.
Chelsea Palace, discuss.
Well, it won't take long to talk about the goals. It was a 0-0 draw. I think, look, same lineup as Wembley, pretty much. The only difference was that, obviously, Kamada's now injured for a couple of weeks.
I was going to ask how long he's been off. Oh, yeah.
Nothing major, just a couple of weeks. Hughes was put in his place, which was kind of the obvious choice. I don't think anybody... Well, mate, you know what kind of problem the club has got at the moment when I can pick the team. Do you get what I'm saying? You describe it as a crisis. I describe it in work in progress. But I think there is one starting team, and that showed... Oh, we'll talk about it later, but that showed consistently throughout that game where you go... Who can we bring on now? And you look at that bench and you go,
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's got real positives and negatives to this.
Of course it has.
You've got the cohesiveness that you know the team are going to perform to a certain level because they know each other so
Example,
well.
At Wembley, you go, play the team that won last year, do it again.
And today.
Yeah.
You could see they were so together and they understood everyone's movements. They were so good on that counter and getting out of trouble.
But you're missing your plan B and your plan C.
Exactly.
And also, who's stepping in if someone gets injured?
There you go. And what happens in a few weeks when you've got two games every week and all that sort of stuff?
Well,
but look, we'll get to that. But so, tell us about the game.
Anyway, both Eze and Gueye were playing because the entire world seems to think, as I'm going to go on a rant again at
Here
some point, I'm sure. But the entire world seems to think that both of these players don't belong to Crystal Palace anymore and don't play for Crystal Palace
anymore. Are you going to do your back off Tottenham rant later?
No, maybe. I think it just... It makes me laugh how there was just utter media shock and it was announced that two players who play for Crystal Palace were going to be playing for Crystal Palace. I mean, what on earth is going on here, people?
Yeah.
So yes, of course, Eze and Gueye played the game. Five players made league debuts for Chelsea. So this shows you the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I agree.
Estavio, Delap, Santos, João Pedro, someone you know well, and Jamie Gittins.
Yeah.
They were all some of the many, I think it was 11 new signings they've made or something.
Yeah.
Five of the 11 got a games day. What can we talk about? Because we haven't got anyone to talk about. We wore our new kit.
Do you know what? That was all right, actually.
I like it.
You know, when I ripped it a bit when I saw it on the social media a few weeks back when we saw it.
There's actually not much to rip on that, is there?
Well, it looks very Wolverhampton Wanderers, but actually in the flesh when they're playing it, it's not that bad.
No, and do you know what? On a separate note, Neil, I'm actually coming round to the home kit as well a little bit now. I've seen them wear it. I actually am. I'm stopping seeing Brighton now. I'm seeing like on the sleeves and stuff, but we digress. Anyway, we go into that game, Neil, something that I didn't realise actually until I did a bit of homework.
What's that?
We went into that game unbeaten in 9.
No, really?
Unbeaten in 9 competitive games.
I suppose you had a good end to the season, didn't you? Yeah.
Yep. And of course, the Cup, Charity Shield, all the other bits and pieces in it. So yeah, 9 games. So technically, we're on form. And then obviously Chelsea, who will keep reminding us, just like I do about the FA Cup, that they are world champions. Oh,
did you see they unveiled like a huge plaque and sign above the stadium this before kickoff as well?
I do have a thought about that. I feel like they did that because they were introducing a new ticketing system and they wanted everyone in the venue earlier. And I feel like that was kind of a ploy because they sent a message out to everyone going, get here an hour and a half early. And I think they had this fear that they were going to muck up the turnstiles.
Yeah, gotcha.
So they thought, let's do that. Because you'd probably do that. I don't know, maybe you do it afterwards, I don't know. But yeah, anyway, but yes, they are going for it. And as you would, I mean, you do the same, we would do the same. If you're technically world champions, then that's what you do. But they're unbeaten in their last 15 Premier League games against Palace. So we haven't beaten them in 15. We drew our last 2, right? Chelsea's never an easy game. And also, Palace are crap at first games of the season.
Oh, really?
Absolutely crap. Yeah. I think you've got to go back 4 years since we got a point on the first game of the season. We just don't do start a season well. And you know what happened last year, right? So I think pretty much our Christmas present was 3 points, wasn't it? So anyway, look, we'll go over the top line because obviously anyone who's a Palace supporter listening to this would have watched it anyway, I'm sure. But I just thought I'd make a mention to the fans that were there because whilst I was watching it on TV, all I could hear was the Palace fans
at
Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
And that's a hell of an achievement.
Yeah,
it was great. And obviously my favourite chant about UEFA and Marinakis and John Textor was cringeworthily loud on the television. I was waiting for an apology from the presenters, actually, for the foul language of our supporters. But there we go. Great atmosphere. Palace fans loud. 13 minutes. Eze wins a free kick just outside the box. Did you see this, Neil?
I did, Andy. Yes, I have been watching Super Sunday. And
right.
Yeah.
He fires it home. Obviously, Gaye finds him a little gap next to the wall.
A little gap?
Yep. Finds him a little gap.
Does he?
By completely taking out...
clothes horse.
Yeah. And then obviously... I celebrated very hard.
Yeah.
In fact, nearly did myself quite a bit of damage actually celebrating. And then, lo and behold, VAR.
Yeah. It's an interesting one, right? Because you look at it in the replay. First of all, you're like, well, what happened? Like, I don't understand. Didn't see anything obvious. But then you look in the replay and you see Mark Guehi pushing, I think it was Caicedo.
It wasn't really a push. It was more of a... He had his legs apart.
Leaning?
It was a forceful lean.
Yeah.
The problem is, the other player, Caicedo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he ended up on one leg. So he was like an unbalanced rugby player going for a tackle. So, and he kind of just absolutely kind of folded. And obviously then, Gaye ends up pushing him into the wall of 4, in essence. But it was clearly planned because that's exactly where Eze slotted it through.
But it's like they're looking for a reason to disallow the goal. Because the reason I thought they'd given the foul against Mark Guehi...
I think the world did,
for
Neil.
Pushing Caicedo. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, okay, well,
and
it's
everyone...
soft, but I could sort of, okay, like...
Well, yeah.
I still thought it was a bit soft. And then they come out, don't they? And like they always do, the referees, they tweet as to what the issue was or what it was.
Well, they also did the announcement in the...
Of course!
Right, and this was the thing that I wasn't expecting because maybe I hadn't done my homework properly about all the changes and stuff. But it was like the Americans. He came out
on the old microphone.
We get to hear the voices of the referees in the stadiums. He basically said, that...
So rather than blowing up and foul and say that it wasn't a goal because Mark Guehi pushed... Caicedo out the way. What they actually then said was that because he pushed Caicedo and Caicedo sort of gave in, as it were, it meant that Mark Guehi, by the time the ball was kicked, was too close to the wall.
Yeah.
His positioning was too close to the wall. And I'm like, what? You're just looking for reasons.
Oh, mate, I think it was Mika Richards who said a very similar thing actually on Sky earlier about how VAR are genuinely now just trying to look for reasons to chalk off goals as to celebrate the fact that they were scored. And look, obviously there's two perspectives on this, isn't there, if you're a Chelsea fan. But then saying that, I know quite a few passionate Chelsea fans from my work who wouldn't give me an inch on any of this sort of stuff. And they both messaged me and said, yeah, VAR was wrong there. Like, that shouldn't have... Well, not VAR was wrong, but it was unjust.
Not, yeah, so it's not that they're wrong. So it's another one of those situations where we get to the beginning of the season and suddenly all the refs doing everything by the book. 10 games time, that will happen again to some team somewhere in the Premier League and it won't be given.
Yeah.
It must have happened.
It must have happened in about 1 in 10 Premier League games for the last however long.
Yes,
I think
it does.
It's the equivalent of being at work and there'd be a bloke, I don't know, let's just call him Nigel, who sits in the corner with his big book of rules, right? His HR rules. And in that book, on a daily basis, them HR rules get broken every day.
Of course they do.
Because there's a rule for everything, right? And then VAR found Nigel in the corner of that little porter cabin or wherever it is in Stockley Park.
Nigel, help us, please.
Nigel just went, hang on a minute, I found something here. Flicked a page whenever it was and found Law 13, which states when three or more defending team players form a wall, all attacking players must remain at least 1 metre from the wall until the ball is in play. And it was introduced, right, that rule, Nigel's rule, we call it, was introduced back in 2019, right? And I don't believe it's ever been enforced.
Not to this degree. Not to the point where they're calling off goals because some player has fallen into another player, has pushed another player. It's so ironic. What we're saying is if Christ, the pushing that happened, that was fine. Yeah. It's basically that he was 3 inches too far to the right, which has caused them to disallow the goal. I mean, it is terrible. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved the fact that it happened to Palace.
Of course you did.
But it was a stupid... Also, just a side point, apologies to any Nigels listening. We appreciate that's maybe
not... It was
not,
just a random name.
It's not how you all speak, I appreciate
it. Just a random name.
But it was a terrible, terrible decision in that sense. But yet again, you can't argue it because it's the rule. But it's just ridiculous that they've just decided today to look at that and go, that's the rule, now we're going to uphold it.
It literally was that someone sat there, in Stockley Park and just gone, oh, hang on a minute. And do you know what they did also? They did it really quickly. The whole thing took less than 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the first time that Palace have not noticed a rule change and then fallen foul.
Well, it's also not the first time that we've been used as an example for a while, is it? I do feel like we are the guinea pigs of the rules. And it's like, well, do you know what? Let's just see what Crystal Palace do if we say they can't have this or do this, and then we'll try it with everybody else.
So that was the biggest sort of thing, really, that happened in that first half, wasn't it, really, ultimately?
Yeah, we found a rule from under a carpet somewhere that hadn't been seen for years. But look, I actually think for the rest of the first half, I believe, and also everyone that I've spoken to, believe that we had the upper hand in that game.
Yeah.
I think we were the team on top. Certainly not on possession stats, but that's not what we're going for. But in terms of chances created and who looks like they're going to get the upper hand, who's more comfortable, I think we were on the up there. I think we were being really effective stopping the Chelsea attack. I think we worked out how they normally play and how they normally get that ball through. Mm. And we had a plan for that. And we were frustrating them. There was yellow cards flying all over the place at one point.
I mean, Palace have perfected this situation, though, haven't they? Over the last 12 months or so, 18 months, they've really perfected that understanding of how to really defend deep in big numbers and then explode out on the counter-attack. And that's really what happened in this game. You could see all the great skilled players that Chelsea have got, but they didn't have the space to do anything. When
Couldn't
it got to
it.
The penalty box, they didn't have the space.
No. No, and also I think that we're getting braver. We're getting braver by the fact, it's a little bit what I said earlier about, that kind of confidence within the team.
Mm.
We were playing Glasner's game, but in some instances, Glasner's game with reluctancy, i.e. there was still a fear on the ball, or fear not to have the ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But now, you've got, multi-million pound world-class players and they're just having a lovely time.
Yeah, I agree.
So look, the second half, I think things changed a little bit. Chelsea looked stronger, they made obviously some changes, which we didn't.
or couldn't.
Or couldn't. I mean, there were some options, but he decided not to go for them.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and obviously Chelsea were shuffling the pack, which they can. I mean, they've got two packs of cards there, haven't they? It's
at
ridiculous.
Least, yeah.
But I think that we still look to threat on the counter. Yep. I think Eze and Sarr both come in very close, amongst other issues that we had from them. I think the last 15 minutes, though, were a little bit of a tough watch for me. Not in terms of nervousness, but it did feel like the tides turned to their... They were hunting for that goal.
Yeah, and defending that much through a game is hard work. Yeah. And usually you would rely on subs to bring a bit of freshness to you. So, yeah, it was hard for Palace in that sense.
Yeah, but I think, look, Lacroix, Henderson kept us in it. I think Richards was superb as well, as was Gaye. But funny enough, our star defender, probably the one that I didn't highlight. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong, but I think the others were even better, is the truth of the matter. I think they bossed him.
I thought Lacroix was really good because he was
so
playing in the central part of the back three.
So strong.
I thought he was really good. Very impressive.
Bearing in mind there was uproar when Anderson left for Fulham and he came in.
Yeah.
It just shows you you've got to have a bit of faith, haven't you? Yeah. So yeah, look, finished 0-0, even though we scored. feel a little bit hard done by. Obviously, VAR found a new rule. I think the other thing, which has annoyed me a little bit because no one really talked about it, was I don't know if you saw that their keeper went for the ball for the punch. And basically punch Mark Gaye in the back of the head.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've watched this.
That's Robert Sanchez for you, yeah.
I've watched this in various different angles. And 100% Gaye got punched in the back of the head.
Yes.
Where we went wrong there, Gaye didn't stay down for too long.
No.
I think he was just more confused about the whole thing, maybe mild concussion. And VAR didn't even look at it. So this bloke with this rule book didn't find that page, did he? He found the page that no one's found since 1924.
Yeah, thanks,
however,
Nigel.
That frustrated me a little bit because, and I'm not doing that whole we should have had it, you know, we should have, but also it's like, come on, if you allocate the rules fairly, all that, VAR should have looked at that because that was a clear punch to the head. It really was.
It really was.
Should have been a penalty.
I agree. It was a clear punch to the head. I don't understand why that was...
Well, I think everyone was so annoyed about the other one and there's so much uproar about the other one that really didn't get any time, did
Maybe
it?
You should write to UEFA about it.
Yeah, but they might write back and I won't see it. Anyway, my man of the match, I believe, was probably Richards actually today. I think he did brilliantly. And look, it's a good point. As I said to you, any point on opening day for Palace, I will take.
Yeah.
So more than happy. By the way, just shows you how well we've done here. Chelsea, first time this calendar year that they've not scored at home.
Oh, really?
So that just shows you how well that defence have done.
I agree. I think it was a good game plan. I think obviously the perfect game plan would have been to go up the other end and score, and they sort of did. But yeah, I agree. Actually, it was quite an impressive start to the season, and I think the benefit at this moment in time for Palace, as I said, is the fact that there isn't any new players. Ironically, for the team, the cohesiveness is there, so they know what they're doing.
Yeah,
and I think that's worked in your favour at the moment. And interesting, isn't it? We Brighton and Palace. Very different experiences on the pitch, both come away with a point, you know.
I mean, Grant, we play Chelsea and you play Fulham. So some would say that our points are worth a little bit more, but
I
don't know.
Both West London teams. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
Similar budgets.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But no, look, jokes aside, two good points, I think, from this week. Anything that's not a loss is a win for me.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Andy. See you in part two, everyone.
Bye. Welcome back, everybody. Whatever you've just heard, buy it. Do it.
Yeah, or don't buy it. Sign up to it.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
I mean,
hopefully it was applicable in some way.
There you go. That's us endorsing.
Yeah. Honestly, there are ads, honest, promise. Premier League. All of the other games that
I think we should stick to football as opposed to advertising.
Probably
because we weren't very good at that.
We weren't very good.
No. Yeah, well, look, I mean, we're excited. Football's back. We've got all the other games that have been going on. Some of which we were expecting, some of which the Forest game annoyed me.
The game started on Friday night.
Go on, yeah.
Liverpool, the champions, against Bournemouth.
At
Anfield. Good place to start and open the season. Any sort of standout thoughts from that game? I think for me, the obvious one was Antoine Semenya, subject to racist abuse, actually at Anfield, which I thought was... horrendous, but at the same time...
They dealt with it though, didn't they?
Exactly, they dealt with it well.
Yeah.
Fair play. One idiot
thankfully didn't ruin it for everyone else. And it looked like he was well supported. So that was good news. And then, yeah, I mean, Liverpool taking a 2-0 lead. I thought that was all game over.
Oh, mate. That was funny enough. I think I was busy and then I checked my phone. I was like, oh my God, the football's on. Ah. And then when I checked, it was 2-2. And then I was frantically trying to find somewhere to watch it or see it or listen to it or something. And then by the time I'd done it, it was not 2-2 anymore.
No.
And it all kind of happened very quickly. What I thought was interesting, bearing in mind, obviously, we've just played Liverpool, right? And I sat and watched. Obviously, when your team plays the other team, you kind of watch them in a different way, don't you? And Ekitike, say for example, he, whilst he had moments of brilliance in the game against us, I felt like he was the player that they signed against Bournemouth, right? He was a standout. He did really well. I think he got a goal and an assist in that game.
Yes,
And he's kind of... Yeah, he had his chance to shine in that. I think Bournemouth was so close to getting a good result. But ultimately, I think Liverpool had the firepower and also just the strength and resilience that I think Bournemouth tired quite quickly, didn't
they? Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a surprise for me because actually the first, like you say, going 2-0 up, I thought it was game over myself. But actually, Bournemouth were still in it all the way through the game. With the amount of outgoings that Bournemouth had in the defence and things this season, or last season, as it were, in the transfer market, I was expecting a drop-off. But do you know what? They played really well.
Mm.
And Semenyo, 2 goals as well.
He was the man of the match, wasn't he?
Fantastic. He really was good. And I mean, it was close to pulling off a great result for them. But yeah, not enough in the end. 2 late goals for Liverpool, obviously. And Champions open with 3 points. And fair enough. You know, it was a good start to the season. It was an exciting game. I enjoyed it. And then Saturday, quite a few games, obviously, whilst Brighton were getting a point from the mighty Fulham. there were a few other games. There was a board draw, wasn't there? There was a 0-0 Aston Villa against Newcastle.
Yeah.
Not much to report on that one, I think. Newcastle need a striker.
Well, Isak didn't play, did he?
No.
And the fans showed their appreciation to him.
Did they?
Yeah, there was a lot of anti-Isak chants, which was quite interesting. Yeah.
Villa looked a little blunt as well, which is interesting as well, because they've sold a few.
Mm.
They've just let go of Jacob Ramsey as well. He literally signed for Newcastle today.
Seen that.
So, yeah, they're going to be... I'm not sure about Villa at the moment. I'm not sure what they're going to do. They have that Guessand, but he hasn't played yet. Up front.
Well, he's another one that was meant to be coming to Palace, but we seem to have lost our checkbook.
Yeah, so 0-0, bit of a damp squib, and we move on, I think.
We do.
Then Sunderland.
Ah, their first top flight game in 8 years.
Against the mighty West Ham.
Yeah.
Your tip for relegation, if I remember last week.
They were, and that's looking good.
You're looking very good for that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, Sunderland had 11 new signings, 7 of which started. Right. So you'd think that was recipe for chaos, wouldn't
you? Well, we were just saying the same about Chelsea,
Right. However, it wasn't. And obviously, it was the two playoff heroes. Is it Meyenda and Ballard?
Yep, that's
who
right.
Who were the big standouts and performed brilliantly. And of course, the new signing, Xhaka, who there was no one that didn't see that working, right?
Well, like I said last week, didn't I? It's just experience.
Yeah.
Someone in that middle of the park to understand what's needed at the right time. And I agree. They were very good. Didn't have all the possession though.
But they looked organised though.
And
they looked really quite dangerous at times.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind also, Neil, they've got Burnley and Brentford coming up as the next two games.
There you go.
So Sunderland are my outside tip for the overperformance category start of the season.
Excuse me. You can't nick my ideas. That was my prediction.
No, I've
week.
Just gone for the first 3 games of the season. you know when them fans go, we're going to win the league, and
all of a sudden
you play Man City.
Yeah. So, it was a great result for them. And actually, I'm sort of really pleased. They're just one of my guilty pleasures, Sunderland. They're a passionate side, passionate team. They're a little bit of the underdogs compared to their neighbours, Newcastle. And I just think they've been fantastic. They've been really hard done by over the last few years with obvious situations with their ownership and other things. And to see them back in the Premier League, I thought it was great, and really good performance from them.
And West Ham, I mean, there was a couple of good build-up play at times, but mate, they were so poor in front of goal. I think 11 shots, 64% possession, and absolutely nothing to show for it. They've got Chelsea, Forest, and Tottenham in their next 3 games.
Yeah,
eek.
And I think that's
they're in trouble.
Well, you called it last week. You reckon they're going to go down, and well, that's definitely not helped them. Playing Bowen as a striker, which is what they played sort of Fulcrug and Bowen up front, really, as a two, and it just didn't work. Lucas Paqueta, I think it's pronounced Paqueta, actually. You know, he looked half the person he was, and they need to do some business, otherwise they're going to be in big trouble.
I think they need to do some business, and I also think Potter needs to rethink the plan a little bit.
Yeah.
I really do. Whatever he's doing is not, it's not getting the best out of them players.
No.
But Potter
generally always starts slow, and last season he'd started slow mid-season, and this season you were expecting, well, I think probably the fans were hoping for something a bit more, especially if you go away to Sunderland in the first game. You expect to come away with something, I would imagine. So, yeah, not a good start for them. And we will see what happens next week. But he's already under pressure, Potter.
Which is ridiculous after one game. But West Ham aren't particularly forgiving.
Speaking of new people to the league, Burnley took a trip to Tottenham.
And that went pretty much how we were expecting,
yes,
right?
Yes, it did. Yeah. Tottenham looking pretty good, pretty okay for first day of the season.
They are.
And an early contender. Well, if anyone hasn't seen it, please go and see Tottenham's second goal and Richarlison's second goal of the game. Oh, what a goal. Did you see it?
I did. And funny enough, I didn't watch the game live, but I saw the highlights reel.
Yeah.
And when there was these rumours of his goal, when the first one went in, I was like, oh yeah, that is a good goal. And then the second one went in, I was like, oh, hang on a minute. That wasn't the one they were talking about. They were talking about that one, because his first one weren't bad either.
It was a lovely finish.
It was almost a rehearsal for the second one. Yeah. And his second one was just a bit more spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, if we did goal of the season right now, he'd win it.
Oh yeah, it was definitely goal of the day. Definitely goal of match week one so far. It was really, really good. I mean, Burnley, their whole season last season was all about their defence. It was all about not conceding goals. They were brilliant at it. And obviously that will help them a little bit in this situation where they're coming into a bigger league. But they need more up front, don't they?
Well, they had more shots and more touches in the opposition area
and
than
still
Tottenham
didn't score
and lost 3-0.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is the thing, you see, and this is why I do think they're going to go down, as I said, but there is a glimmer of hope for me that when you're creating the chances and you have got the touches in the opposition box, you'd hope that that's almost the hard bit. The easy bit is actually the final kick in the back of the net, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So therefore, they mucked up their chances against Tottenham, but against potential lesser opposition, you would think that they're creating enough there to get things moving. I really hope, I mean, it's not good for teams like us if they do, but I do really hope that these bottom three create a bit of competition, because it just makes it so much more interesting.
Yeah, yeah. What other things happened? Oh, I tell you what else we should probably talk about. I know we don't like to talk about the big six too much, but my tip for relegation, Wolves.
Oh, they're looking good
game.
For that as well.
Yeah, I'm looking pretty good on that one as well, yeah.
Oh.
But how good were Man City first day of the season? No rustiness from them, was there?
And they're off.
Wow. Yeah.
And they're off. And to be fair, you called them as the winners of the league, didn't you? And I think that...
I mean, it's a bit early, but still, I'm not changing my mind yet.
The point being that I think they've come out of the traps quick, and they're proving to everybody that they are the team that everyone thought they were.
Yeah.
And Shirky, I mean, he scored a brilliant goal.
I can't believe he's still only 22, I think.
Yeah.
You've been watching him play in France for quite a few years, then realised he got his debut at 16. I didn't realise he was still so young.
His debut at 16?
Yeah.
That's news to me, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Unbelievable player. But I think what will truly be the signing of the summer, I mean, they paid the money for it, but Tijani Reinders.
Oh, mate, he was superb. Oh, I don't think there was anyone missing De Bruyne, was there?
No, absolutely not. I agree. A different type of player, but making that sort of connection between defence, midfield and attack, passing, power. Yeah, he looks great. Really does, straight away. And Man City 4-0, I mean... Yeah, blimey.
I mean, they were playing Wolves, though.
I
think, if they can do that against some of the bigger opposition, then, let's see.
But, you know, we've been sitting here talking about other teams saying they were rusty, they weren't quite gelling and all that sort of thing. You know, Liverpool, yes, okay, it's Bournemouth, which are a good side. They still conceded two and almost lost it.
Yeah, they did.
Man City didn't even blink. You know, 4-0, job done. So
not looking forward to playing them. I don't know about you.
No, I agree. No, and we've got them, what, two games time? So can't wait.
I'm looking forward to that.
Sunday, There was a few other games.
Yes.
Man U Arsenal was the Super Sunday. That was a bit of a bore, I think. That didn't really work out as spectacular as everyone was expecting it to be. It was okay. Got a little bit feistier near the end, but Arsenal ran out 1-0 winners. They just got clung on, really got their goal and then just waited it out. And Man U were a little bit better than last season. You can sort of... You can see what they're trying to do, I think, now. It looks like they've got a plan and they finally got some players that fit the shape of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, the guy from Brentford looks good, didn't he?
Yeah, Mbeumo, yeah. He was very good. And I actually thought, I'd forgotten he was even there, Mason Mount. Like, I'd forgot that he'd moved from Chelsea almost a season and a half ago now, and he's been injured all this time. And he looks fit. He looks ready to go. And, you know, he's a good little player. So they looked okay, Man United. But still, no goals, even though they brought Šeško on near the end and still didn't score. So a bit of a bore fest, in my opinion. But the other game today, while you were watching the Palace game, there was your nemesis, Mr. Naranakis' team, Nottingham Forest 3, Brentford 1.
I'll be honest with you, this has upset me more than anything else.
That's it.
I'm more annoyed about this than
Why?
About the VAR.
Why?
I genuinely despise Forest now. And I can't... You know, like, mate, I'm on a Rivals podcast with you. I actually... In this moment in time...
At this point, yeah, okay.
I actually... here's the thing. I'm looking forward to the Forest game next week at Selhurst Park more than the Brighton game coming up at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you think about this, right? Marinakis has got to go to Selhurst Park and watch that game. Right? So that is a hell of a rivalry right now, and he's going to get absolutely eaten alive. I mean, he ain't going to care, is he? He'll bring his 27 bodyguards and all the other
bits. But even if it's... I mean, there will be a lot on that game, won't there? There'll be a lot of feeling at that
game. Mate, absolutely.
It's going to be a hot one. It really is.
It's going to be epic. And that was why I was hoping that Forest... Because you never quite know what Forest you're going to get, do you? It annoyed me that Chris Woods has come out the blocks quickly today, and... The other thing that really annoyed me was Dan and Doi.
Yes, I thought that might be a bit biting for you. That was a tough one, wasn't it? Because you were linked with him, weren't you?
He was another one that was meant to have been the Andy's special, I think it'll all be done by the time the pod comes out, situation. And obviously, good old Steve Parrish is just, I don't know what's been going on. It's so frustrating. But obviously, not only have they got a couple of players that we were linked with, but they're now, of course, pushing on and signing and looking at even better, bigger players for Europa League.
I was just about to say that. It's interesting, isn't it? They've done what Palace should have done, in the sense that as soon as that decision was made, they went go on about three signings.
Yep.
And they've got their players in already.
Well, I think the reason they've probably done that is because I'm going big here, but Marinakis has got a few friends up in UEFA, and yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he knew which way that was going anyway. I really wouldn't. I really wouldn't be surprised. So I think he might have had a bit of a head start, but you're right. It doesn't excuse. And
it doesn't
being a Palace supporter, I can look at the bad and the good. And I think everyone that is listening to this knows that I'm reasonably subjective when it comes to this sort of stuff. And we should have been doing so much better. We'll talk about it later, but we haven't backed our most successful manager. And watching Forest beat Brentford 3-1 has annoyed me, because it's highlighted the fact that, I mean, look, Amari Hutchinson, James McAtee took their debuts. Gibbs White, who was held to ransom to sign a new contract and threaten the mafia and all sorts, was on good form and has cheered up since that horrible video that we saw. But
Brentford, come on.
Brentford don't look great.
They looked awful, didn't they?
They don't look great.
We both talked about Brentford last week in our predictions. And we talked about the fact that we didn't put them as relegation, even though a lot of people have talked about that.
Mm.
We weren't sure which way it was going to go. And I still think, obviously it's one game, I still think there's plenty of time to turn the ship around with Brentford. They're a sensible outfit. They will make good signings. And if the manager isn't working, they'll make a decision quickly enough to get themselves out of trouble, is my opinion.
I think that they will flirt with a bit of trouble, but I think that they'll be somewhere between the 12th and the 16th mark, is my opinion on this.
But it was
one.
A terrible start. I mean, 3-0 down on it as well. 3-1 makes it look a little bit tighter. It really wasn't.
Oh, mate, don't get me wrong. I've just said some things about them, you know, potentially not having a great season, but I was cheering them on. I really, really was. So
I don't blame you. It's a sore one. It's a bitter one to take, isn't it, really, at the moment?
I don't hate them to divert the anger away from what we haven't done. I know what we haven't done, and I know what we could have done better. I just don't like anybody benefiting in an underhand way. And we all know, even the Forest fans know that that's the case. So I guess the worst thing that could happen now is they win the Europa League, but let's just hope that don't happen.
Oh, God, please no. I wouldn't like that either, personally.
Be awful.
Yeah, I agree. Look, that was a whistle-stop tour of the fixtures this weekend. It was just great to have football back. I have to admit, though, being able to see all the different games and seeing what was happening.
And a lot of goals, Neil. You look at that. Yeah. I mean, there's threes, fours. Like, there's big numbers.
Yeah, there were.
Ironically, our games that were the ball fests in terms of the goals. But
No, I agree. And it was great to have it back. And I look forward to next week. Just before we take a little break, I just want to say one thing, which is a little bit of news that I didn't talk about when I talked about the match, because I thought I'd give it a bit of space. But there was some sad news at the Albion on the weekend. After the game, it was announced, and we did notice some commotion in the crowd, let's say. But unfortunately, one of our supporters passed away at the game.
Yeah, that's really sad.
In the Upper East Stand. So just wanted to send out our condolences to the families and anyone affected. And I hope everyone's getting the support that they need.
And I thought the club managed that brilliantly, by the way, as well. They put out a statement, didn't they? Because there was a few questions about why would the game not stopped and things like this. And it was, I think the club managed it really, really sensibly, which is that would have caused too much commotion. Everyone was actually unaware of what was going on.
I agree.
Fair play to Brighton. They, again, managed it well. And condolences to the family. That's awful.
See you in a mo. All that's left to really talk about are two club-related things, really. One, transfers. We should talk about any rumours. And he's looking at me like a blank. Hey, what's a transfer? I haven't heard of what that
is. I was just thinking that you will. I'll listen.
And we should also talk about the games we've got coming up.
I've got
Andy's
a few of
got
them.
A very exciting one, haven't you?
Got a busy couple of weeks, haven't we?
Yeah. Okay, look, transfers. So the one I talked about last week, Malik Yalcoy, that was confirmed as a loan to Swansea, and he actually started on Saturday as well, so he's already straight into the team. That's good.
Nice.
I'm good for him because I want him to get lots of minutes this season and come back ready. Hopefully ready to replace a Carlos Baleba that is staying at Albion this transfer window and looks like for this season.
For now, yeah.
As I said, made that point last week.
No, you're right.
And I stood by it. I put my career on the line,
I just
Andy.
Wanted to reiterate it to annoy you. Just to be very transparent.
It doesn't annoy me. I understand the policy and...
I'm not annoyed. I'm not annoyed.
It doesn't annoy me. As I said last week, he wasn't going. It just doesn't make any sense for the club to sell him at that point. And it looks like, lo and behold, all Man United had to have done was really just contact us and go, how much? Oh, okay.
Well, that's the thing, though. I think he could have gone if Man United were willing to spend that money. But
we knew
not.
They weren't. Yeah, exactly. So, they can't afford it. Not yet, anyway. So that's the good bit of news from our point of view, I think. Just
although
the fact
he did say that he wanted to go.
Oh, I'm sure he does. Like,
he did say very interested, I think I read.
I think next summer, Man United will obviously bid. But I also think there may be a couple of other teams that want him next summer as well. So we'll have to see. And that just means even more moolah for us.
I mean, I've heard he's already been invited to their Christmas party.
Has he?
Yeah.
Palace. Transfers confirmed. Should we move on?
Yep, less smug now. Okay. None.
Yep. I should just record that every week and just play the same VT over it,
mate,
shouldn't I?
Absolutely. And also anything that I said might be happening didn't.
Okay. Let's talk about rumours then, because that's all we can talk about. I don't, from a Brighton point of view, I don't have anything, by the way. Everything's still quiet. There's nothing to report there. Palace, we've got the obvious ones. As an outsider, what I would say is the Eze, it looked a little bit like he was saying goodbye today.
Mm-hmm.
But I also appreciate that they've got a busy week, Palace. But from what you can see on social media, it does look like a move is getting closer, I would suggest.
Well, okay. Let's just backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
Neil, because Arsenal fans, you know, the ones that had his name printed on his shirt asked him if he was coming
and
he
smirked at him
and all the
week.
Other bits and pieces. Yep. Well, they're a bit quieter now, aren't they? Because it now looks like their arch rivals, Tottenham, seem to think the same thing. Yeah, I don't think this is quite... I know it looks from the outside that I'm clinging on to this. I do believe that Eze will move on.
Yeah.
right? And I don't for one second think that's not going to happen. To reiterate, what I do believe is the case is that he knows that if he stays at Palace this year, he's still got as good a chance of playing in the England squad. He's still got as good a chance to win something, whatever it would be.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to move. He's also with his mates who are successful and he's having a lovely time, right? He is not that player that refuses to train or do the ISAC or whatever it would be. So the situation as it is currently, as I understand this,
yeah,
Tottenham are now, and, you know, Fabrizio and David Ornstein and all the other people are all saying, oh, Tottenham, Tottenham, Tottenham. And even they're backtracking on what they're putting out now. They are, which is that they're saying it was like, oh, Eze agreed terms, Eze closed, you know, bid imminent. And that was, you know, that's been for the last 3 days now, which was bids coming in today. But now, yet again, there's an agreement being made with the player, which I don't for one second think is wrong. I think Eze's probably had a chat or through his agents, whatever. They've agreed the number. Still no bid accepted. Still no bid accepted for Eze for any of the clubs that have been in.
Yeah, but there's a reason for that, Andy. Come on. Like, you can't be that naive to think he's going to stay when all of the...
I don't think he's going to stay. Like, I said he wasn't.
There's a reason that he's not gone yet, and that's because Palace have done absolutely nothing in the transfer market. They need to replace him.
Yeah, so
they
need but I also to go and don't find think someone. Anyone's coming with the right number yet.
But they can't. They won't accept a bid until they've got someone in.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, in my opinion.
Yeah. Glasner was asked some direct questions today after the game, or before and after the game. And Glasner's quote, which is much to my kind of method of thinking here, is don't believe everything you read in the newspapers, which clearly you do, Neil. So that's the first one.
Right.
In fact, he actually said, as I tell the children, don't believe everything you need to read in the newspapers, when he was asked about whether Eze was going to Tottenham and is this his last game.
But he can't say he is, can he?
Well, but wait for it. The next thing, after the game, he says, I know Ebbs's clause is gone, right? So he's confirming the fact that that £68 million clause has expired. So it's the club's decision whether he goes. We will see what happens, right? So again, that's not a no, but then it continues. He will come tomorrow to the Crystal Palace training ground.
Yep.
Tuesday's off, and then Wednesday, I expect him to be back playing for us against Fredrikstad, which is actually on Thursday.
Yep.
So he's actually got the day wrong for the game, but that's fine.
But that's fine. I still expect him to be around because you're not going to sign a player to replace him in the next 2 days. So, it's going to take a week to find someone, isn't it? And get an agreement in place and then get them signed.
My
and all
point
that sort
being,
of
though,
stuff.
The media, if you Google Eze now, the first 30 things that come up on Google News will be Eze's wave goodbye to the fans. Glasner subbed Eze off at 85
I don't read
minutes.
Any of that.
And that's all from the big media outlets and also from the normal people as
Fabrizio
well.
Fabrizio Romano and David Ornstein, probably the two, and Nicola Sharia as well, are probably the three that I look at as to sort of try and understand what's going on. They're generally on the right path.
Yeah, they both said he was going to Arsenal.
And they, exactly. Yeah. But what they've said was, they've all said and maintained along the line, is that Eze wants to leave. He wants to go play Champions League football. He's agreed terms, like all players do, like Belaba did. He's agreed. His agents have had a chat with whichever club, put a new club in the space and say that club. And they've agreed terms. And they know what he's going to get paid. He knows what his contract's going to be, et cetera, et cetera. The most up-to-date news that I can see is that, like you've just said, is that the club that's currently in that space, which is Spurs, are yet to get a fee agreed because they haven't actually put an amount in there yet. I think they had one go right at the beginning of last week, and then it was rebutted, from what I can see.
Yeah, that's news to me. I still don't believe there's been a bid put in.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see. I think there's lots of conversations going on. As you said, he's probably going, but it's probably not as sudden as it's being made out in some outlets.
Also, I think if we can't get who we want in, he's going nowhere.
So
and
who
I think
are
he's
they
more than happy. El Kanous from Leicester.
Oh, Leicester. Yeah.
21-year-old attacking midfielder, Moroccan international. It's reporting, again, now this is the other way around. It's reported that we've agreed terms with him.
Yep.
But the difference in this one being, Neil, we've put a bid in.
Hey.
So apparently we put in a bid of 20 million. Leicester laughed at us. No agreement between. So rumour has it, as the press are reporting, is that we've now moved on to somebody else and left that one hanging where it is for now.
Sensible approach, especially from a team that are going to need the money. Leicester need the money. So, you know, if they're immediately saying no to the, well, I mean, everyone says no to the first bid, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And Palace knew that as well. 20 million probably isn't enough. I would imagine it's not going to be much more than 25, 26 million though, personally. Good little player though.
Oh, mate.
Quite young, as you said, 21. I really rate him. He's a good option. Fits in that style of what Eze would be, you know, trying to replace, which I appreciate. You know, he's not going to be at that level, but at least he's got the potential.
Yeah, I agree.
You said he's moved on to where?
Christos Zolis.
Ah, yes. Okay, yeah, from Bruges.
Greek forward, yeah, from Bruges. I think he's quite a versatile attacker, which is what we need. I think we need, bearing in mind we've got a small squad, I think we need players that can play across different roles across that front line so that we can kind of mix things up. And he would suit that perfectly.
I agree. He's got a lot more experience as well. It'd be interesting. They might go for both, you know. It may not be a one or the other because Solis is much more experienced. He's played Champions League football. He actually got, when he was really young, he played at Norwich for a while as well.
He didn't have the best time at Norwich,
didn't,
though.
No, but he was very young. But yeah, I think he's a good player. I think he's comfortable across, as you said, comfortable across the whole of the pitch, really, across that front. And I think he'd be a very good fit for Palace. He's so quick as well.
Oh, mate, he's both feet he uses, and he's effective cutting inside, which is great from the wide areas. And obviously, we utilise the wide areas quite a lot. And I think, look, his stats from last season, 21 goals and 14 assists in 56 games. Yeah. 3 goals and 2 assists in 7 appearances this year already. So apparently where we're at with that one is that we've had an offer rejected, but we're going in with a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's basically where we're at.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity there to get both. I mean, if you can get both for the same money as an Eze, that's not a bad option, is it?
Mate, I'd take a 16-year-old Greek person that we've never heard of right now.
Yeah,
but truthfully, I do trust the process. You look at what we've done previously, we historically leave it late. And that is our strategy, because if you leave it late, you don't overpay.
I mean, yeah, but it's not helping your manager, is it?
Mate, of course it's not helping a manager. But also, the other thing to consider here, which is, I know exactly what Steve Parrish will say, it's not hindering results, is it? So I think that's the thing. And Glasner still hasn't signed his new contract anyway, but I think that Palace will try and push it down the line a bit, and then we'll see where we're at. But
okay. Fair enough. Talking about results, your next fixture, we alluded to it a few moments ago. You have got your first European game on Thursday. Mm. Congratulations, Andy, first of all.
Can you congratulate us if it's not actually the Conference League? Because we haven't even made it in there yet.
Yeah, so which loser did you end up playing?
Fredrikstad, FFK, also known as Norwegian club. They've won 9 league championships, Neil.
Right.
12 Norwegian Cups. They're currently midway through their season.
Oh.
So they're on a bit of an advantage here.
Right, yeah.
They're sat in 7th.
Okay.
But that's out of a 16-team league. So kind of mid-table team, as it were.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously they lost the... Do you remember there was this playoff?
Oh, right?
In essence, a Europa League playoff is what it was.
I couldn't really get my head around
Europa
it.
League, loser goes in Conference League. That's how it kind of worked. So obviously they lost 5-1.
Right.
So...
They lost to Midtjylland, yeah?
That's right.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So we get to play them now. Obviously, the game's on Thursday. I've got my tickets. I'm excited. Can't wait. Let's see what happens.
It sounds like surely even your youth team should be able to beat them.
I feel like that isn't something that I'm thinking, no. I'm thinking that it's a European game. It's our first European game.
It's a team that lost 5-1 to Midtjylland. It's a team that are currently 7th in the Norwegian league.
Yeah.
And you're worried about it?
No, I'm not worried about it, but that's the exact attitude that means you underestimate the opposition,
right,
isn't it?
Okay.
So I think we will play. I mean, look, you've got Glasner already stating that Eze's going to be playing.
So we'll see.
And Glasner does not put out a weakened team. So I think he'll, if we're 2 or 3 up, I think he'll bring people off and give people a chance.
Yeah, I mean,
he'll go out fine.
Is it 2 legs?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So you've even got to go back over there as well.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, fair enough then.
I think it's only a 15,000-seat stadium or something as well.
Yeah.
I did look on, I actually don't have enough points to get the first phase of tickets. I think they're going to sell Monday. But Yeah, it's just so strange over there, but
it's so strange that you've got to have a playoff to get into the Conference League.
It's not strange, Neil. It's an absolute take, what it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you say, probably then it probably makes sense if it's two legs. Yeah, start with a strong side, get 3, 4, 5 up or whatever, and then take them all off.
And he will. You know this. Look, mate, Glasner play Wood Green in the Carabao Cup, and he'll still play a first team. He wants to win everything.
Yeah, no,
that's the way you do it.
I don't blame him. Well, listen, mate, honestly, good luck. I hope you stink the place out and lose 4-0.
Yep.
Sunday, you got the big one. Talked about it a little bit earlier. The grudge match of grudge matches.
Do you know what? Here's my feeling on this one. Bearing in mind Steve Parish has inadvertently kind of referenced the Marinakis situation.
Yeah.
Right? And that was the bit that shocked me, which was I just thought it was all a load of newspaper garbage, right? And until he referenced it quite a few times in official statements and in interviews, they shouldn't invite him. He shouldn't be allowed to come. Why would you invite someone around your house that's just done that?
Yeah.
Like, he should be uninvited from his seat in the stadium. And
or seats.
That's unfair.
Sorry.
He should be uninvited from his seat. And he should be unallowed to attend. That is our right.
Yeah, look, I get it. I really do. I'm just really looking forward to the battle. I just,
going on social media, watching this all play out, it has been, as an Albion fan, it has been the highlight of summer.
Yeah.
You know, it really has.
Do you not feel left out, though? Do you feel like your rival's got a new rival?
I was a little bit. It feels a little bit weird. Like my ex got a new boyfriend. It's a bit weird, you know? But having them now, Marinakis and Forrest, turn up so soon in the season, and it's all going to... I'm so looking forward to it.
There's nothing better for them, is there? We've just played a Norwegian team at Selhurst Park, and we're about to get on a plane to go to Norway to get a place in the competition that they were meant to be doing these games themselves, right? And then they obviously don't even have to qualify for a competition they didn't even qualify for.
We're not going over that again.
But no, look, do you know what? All we can do, and I tell you something now, if you look at how Palace over the last season and before, like without trying to rub salt into the wounds, they are prepared for war against their rivals and do all right. And they will, you know, and that's what it's going to be at Forest on Sunday. It's going to be a battle, and the Palace fans.
Do you think the players know that? Do you think the players are up for it?
Because
obviously the fans are. I can see that completely, and the boardroom is. But do you think the players understand that?
I think they probably understand it more than anybody else. I think this directly affects them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What's happened has directly affected, and it's not a result of what Forrest has done. It's how Forrest have acted in that situation.
And
that's the thing that the Forrest fans keep missing here, which is we're not blaming you for what happened. We're blaming you for how you acted and how you tried to benefit out of it.
Absolutely.
That's the situation. Yeah. And that's why we're going to kick your ass on Sunday on the field, to clarify.
Okay. So it's what do you reckon the score will be?
2-1 Palace.
Crystal Palace 2, Weasels 1.
I don't think we're going to make it easy, though.
Okay.
But yeah.
I can't wait for that, honestly. I'm definitely going to be trying to watch that one. So Albion, remember us? We have a game on Sunday as well, and we are going away to the Hill Dickinson Stadium.
Ah.
Yeah, so we're going to Everton. Everton are opening their stadium. Well, obviously it's been open for a while, but this is the first actual proper football game in the sense of an official professional game that's going to be played there. How much fun is that going to be?
What do you think's going to happen there, Neil?
The difficulty is, at the moment, is that we haven't seen Everton play yet because there's one more game tomorrow night as of time of recording.
Monday night football,
which is Everton against Leeds.
And I think Everton are going to wallop them.
Do you?
And I think that they're going to be in form. Yeah. Ready to go.
Yeah. I thought you might say that.
And then Brighton are going to turn up all scared about last minute goals again and it's going to crumble.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong. If Brighton go ahead, I'm not going to feel comfortable.
No.
So it'll be an interesting game. There is an element of hoping that Everton, and they're not going to be comfortable in their new stadium yet, obviously.
You know, it's going to be new for them. The other part of it, though, isn't there, which is that it's like
new stadium, new things, new big deal. Yeah. Like, this is the party, don't crash it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I
don't know how it's going to be. I will have to see how the game goes Monday night, see how they play. But obviously they've made some good signings, in my opinion. They've finally gone into the market in the last couple of weeks. They've got Grealish on loan from Man City.
We still call him which Grealish turns up, though.
Yes, yes. They've got Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall from Chelsea, which is another good
signing.
They've got, I can't remember, is it Tierra, Barry, who they got from Villarreal, who's a centre-forward. He's pretty good. They spent quite a bit of money on him. I think it was like 30 million euros or something. Alcaraz, they've got, I mean, they made some good signings. We'll have to wait and see if they can all gel. Yeah, David Moyes, I mean, they always get to a certain level, you know, and they'll work hard knowing the team.
Oh, they
like
will.
Him,
so. They're not going to be an easy team to beat, mate.
Yeah, look, my prediction, I think it comes down to, I really hope Welbeck starts for a start. I would like to see him actually play the number 9 and then Jorginho in the 10. If that happens, then we might have a chance.
Mm.
Prediction, I'm going with a Desmond, I think. I think I'm going to say 2-2.
Well, funny enough, I'm in the similar situation to you, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see you after game week 2 with any more than 2 points.
Yeah.
And that isn't a great start for you. With
no, it's
your,
not.
Your who you've got. But let's see. I mean, we can't judge that because it hasn't happened yet.
No.
But what do you think the Palace score is going to be, by the way?
I think against Forest,
I
think Forest will win it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think they've got more power up front. And I think it will only be like a goal, though. I think it'll be, as we talked about before, the two styles meshing together. You know, who doesn't want the ball the most? But I think Forest will win, yeah.
Let's see.
Because I just think Palace will have the other game on their mind. I think that's going to be your biggest challenge this season. If you do get through the playoff, which I presume you will, obviously. But if you do get through, having that mentality and enough squad to play twice a week for quite a while, you know, it we'll have to wait and see. But yeah,
let's see what we've got to talk about next week then.
And that's us done for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thanks for sticking with us.
Make sure you follow the show and don't miss the next episode when it drops.
We'll be back next week to discuss Everton versus Brighton and, of course, Palace versus Forest.
Plus, Palace's first ever European adventure too.
Woohoo! And you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and X. Just search Seagull Eagle and be our friend.
Friends. Drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com. Be nice, though, or I'll send a letter to UEFA to complain.
We'll see you next week. Until then,
Seagull!
Eagle!